over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Gentlemen, I'm Alfred Adisk, and this is Financial Survival brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. Today is the 4th of July, year of our Lord 2013. I believe it's 237 years since the Declaration of Independence was enacted, adopted. Back on July 4th, in the year of our Lord, 1776. And we are in the midst of our 4th of July celebration. And a lot of people don't even realize what we're celebrating. Well, we know we've got 4th of July. It's the biggest, uniquely American holiday. It is the only holiday that we have that's bigger than this is Christmas. And Christmas is global as opposed to being uniquely American. They're not celebrating the 4th of July in France or in England or in China. Right? But there may be a Christmas celebration in all of those countries, at least for some of the people. So you get my point. This is not the biggest celebration we have in this country. Christmas is bigger, but it's the biggest uniquely American holiday that we have in this country. And yet, if you were to ask people, what are we celebrating on the 4th of July? And most people are just celebrating a day off from work, an opportunity to go out and get a little snockered, drinking beer or whatever, out on the some picnic area, play a little baseball, go swimming, grill some hamburgers or some steaks and hot dogs and whatever. But what are we celebrating? And I suspect that if you did a survey of average Americans, you'd come up with results that would remind you of Jay Leno and his, what did he call them? Sidewalk All-Stars or something like Jaywalk All-Stars, I guess that's. He'd go down and he'd ask people along the streets, he'd ask them questions about what was happening in the world and the good news events and history and one thing and another, and it was pretty amazing how ignorant some people are. If we were to ask people, what are we celebrating on the 4th of July? Very few people really understand what this uniquely American holiday is all about. All they usually know is it translates into a three-day weekend. That's the way it typically works out. I'm not sure if we're going to have a three-day weekend since today is Thursday. I'm not sure if other people... Are we off on Friday? Does anyone know? I'm not. I know I'll be working on Friday. I don't ever get a day off except for Saturday and Sunday, I guess. So you get 2 a week, but that's all I get. In any case, what are we celebrating on the 4th of July? Some people would tell you that we are celebrating our victory in the American Revolution, and that's not true. 4th of July, 1776, was closer to the beginning of the Revolutionary War than it was to the end. All right, it wasn't quite the onset, but it was nearly the onset of the Revolutionary War. Some people would say, well, we're celebrating a great victory, an individual victory in one of the battles. And that's not true either. We're not celebrating any victory of any battle. Some people will tell you it has something to do with the Civil War. You may even find a few think it has something to do with Korea or World War II. But what we are celebrating on the 4th of July is the Declaration of Independence. The single most profound spiritual and radical document ever created by our government, or by the people who ultimately created the government. It is part of the organic law of the United States of America. It's been declared to be so by the Congress of the United States in the revised statutes of 1873 and 1875. Even after the 14th Amendment, they said Declaration of Independence, Articles of Confederation, Northwest Ordinance, and the Constitution are the four documents that comprise the organic law of the United States. United States of America. At no point did the Congress suggest that the Constitution, which was first ratified in 1788, rescinded any of the previous documents. Under the organic law of the United States of America, as declared by Congress in 1873 and 1875, the Declaration of Independence is not merely an interesting historical document. It is as much the law to this day as is the Constitution of the United States. Still the law. And it can't be amended or ratified. And the government doesn't want you to know this. It doesn't want you to understand the Declaration of Independence. We really aren't taught anything about it in our high schools and grade schools, colleges. And yet this is the cornerstone for American exceptionalism. This document espoused principles that were basically unprecedented and previously unseen in the world. And it said, we hold these truths to be self-evident. And in doing so, they made the most radical political statement in Western political history, something far more radical than anything seen from Marx or Engels or Mao Zedong or anybody else. Oh, these are radicals. No, these people are nobody. They're lightweights, they're punks, they got nothing. This Declaration of Independence, again, the most profound and spiritual document ever produced as part of our American heritage. And we're going to spend most of this program, I'm not sure how long it's going to take me, but we're going to explore the Declaration of Independence today. We're going to go into it and talk about it. And I'm going to try to explain the way I understand it and explain why I understand it the way I do. And I want you to consider this. I know that given that it's the 4th of July and here we are live at 1 o'clock Pacific Coast time and 4 o'clock East Coast time, and most of you are out, you know, most of the audience that we might otherwise expect, you're out at the picnic. You're out getting ready to watch the fireworks tonight, and who knows what all's going to happen here. But I know that we don't have a large audience today. That's just to be expected. But even so, this program is going to go out, and there'll be a few people that listen now, and it will be rebroadcast later on today and tomorrow, and who knows? Maybe the analysis I'm going to offer today on the Declaration of Independence will be helpful. It won't be the first time I've offered this analysis. It's It's a standard presentation with me in some regards, and I welcome the opportunity to make this presentation here on the 4th of July, because this is critical. This goes, more than anything else, this document goes to what it means to be an American. So let's just start with it. We talk about the Declaration of Independence, and we refer to it as the title of the document, the Declaration of Independence. In fact, that's not the title of the document. It's not the proper title. Whenever I refer to it, I put the Declaration of Independence in quote marks, because I know it's the shorthand that we've adopted and we've come to use. But the truth of the matter is, the proper title for the document that was adopted on July 4th, 1776 is, quote, "The Unanimous Declaration of the 13 United States of America." That's the title of the document. The Unanimous Declaration of the 13 United States of America. And that title has caused some confusion over the years. And it's worth just considering the title here for a moment. In the title, they say the Unanimous Declaration of the 13 United States of America, and the word "United" is not capitalized. Right? We've got "United" lowercase, "States" capitalized, "of" lowercase, "America" capitalized. Some people have taken that as evidence that the proper name of this country is the United States of America, where the word "United" is not capitalized. That's not true. This document only created 13 individual states that were as separate from each other as Germany is from France. Each one was intended to be, under this declaration, they were intended to be 13 separate nations. That was the intention. And there was no single entity where, although the 13 states acted in concert in this declaration, they were not unified under a single system of government. And there was nothing like the United States of America that we understand today, or some people would say the United States with the central government in Washington, D.C. That didn't exist in 1776. And therefore, when they say the Unanimous Declaration of the 13 United States of America, they mean we've got 13 states in America who are united in this particular declaration, but they are not united as a single political body. They are acting in concert, but they are not united. And therefore, the word "United" is not capitalized. It's used as an adjective. It's not part of a proper name. And a lot of people have leapt to the conclusion, they see it and they say, oh, United States of America, with lowercase u in the United. That must be the proper name of the country. The country did not begin to exist until a few years later with the Articles of Confederation, 1781. Articles of Confederation created a perpetual union, a confederation and perpetual union styled the United States of America. And the is capitalized, United is capitalized, States is capitalized, America is capitalized. This is the proper name of the nation that was created in 1781. In 1776, we didn't create a single nation. We created 13 separate states, 13 separate nations, and therefore it's appropriate that the word "United" be lowercase, because it's used as an adjective and not part of a proper name. Let's do the first paragraph. When in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people, and this is a critical word, one people, it's a vital and important word throughout our organic law. When in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and nature's God entitle them, A decent respect for the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. The founders are simply saying, look, we've had enough of Great Britain and we want out. But we think, we recognize that a decent respect for the opinions of the rest of the world, the understanding of the rest of the world, compels us to explain the reasons for this divorce. Huh? It's not enough just walk out the door and say, that's it, I'm gone. You got to explain, we're leaving, and here's why. We have to justify our reason for separating from Great Britain. One of the things that's important in this first sentence, it refers to the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and nature's God entitle them. If you are going to make claims, you need to have a title to whatever it is you're going to claim. For example, if I claim a particular car, say, that's my car. How do you know? I have title to the car. If I claim a particular piece of land, I say, that's mine. How do you know? I have title to that land. All rights flow from title. If you don't have title, you don't have rights. Right? If I try to claim your car or your land, and you say, no, that's not yours, Al. See, we have you got the title on that. I don't have title, you do. That means you have the right to the land. You have the right to the automobile. So here in the Declaration it says, assume among the powers of earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and nature's God entitle them. It's telling us something important. Some of the claims that you might want to make in terms of rights are claims that you're going to have to base on the laws of nature or nature's God. You're going to have to find, and you can find principles in the Bible, for example, that will lay a foundation for you to make certain claims of rights and liberty. For example, I use on a regular basis, who am I? I will tell you that I am one, a man made in God's image as per Genesis 1, 26 through 28. On the sixth day, God created man in his image and gave man dominion over the animals. I am a man made in God's image. As per Genesis 1, 26 through 28, because I am made in God's image, I am entitled to dominion over the animals. And there's more beyond that, but that's what we can pull out of Genesis 1, 26 through 28. I move on in the claim of who am I? I am endowed by my Creator with certain unalienable rights. That's the second sentence in the Declaration of Independence. These are fundamental principles that can't be easily denied, refuted by government. They can't argue with me if I say I'm a man made in God's image. It's a fundamental principle of the Jewish and Christian faiths, and it can't be refuted without government imposing a secular faith upon me, right? A pagan faith. They are forcing me out of my Christian faith. My Christian faith says I'm made in God's image. I have freedom of religion. The government cannot refute that position. If I'm made in God's image, then I have the right to dominion over the animals. I have a right to be treated as something other than an animal. As I've talked on this program on a regular basis, I've been sued for $25,000 a day under drug laws. I was involved in the manufacture and distribution of colloidal silver. And I read the drug laws and realized they only apply to animals. And when I advanced that defense, the Attorney General, after having invested 6 years and nearly $500,000 in pretrial investigation and hearings, just dropped the case. I perceived that from a freedom of religion perspective, you can't call me an animal, and therefore you can't subject me to the drug laws. And the government effectively admitted that by just saying, we're out of here, we quit, goodbye. All right? Well, we're going to talk more about this, and we'll get into the second sentence of the Declaration when we return in about 3 minutes. Please stay tuned.
A heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit, toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thethreews.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Adusk, and this is Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. Give Melody Cedarstrom a call, 1-800-375-4188. Today is the 4th of July, and I'm talking about the cause for the celebration. And it is the Declaration of Independence. And to say it's the Declaration of Independence that's the cause for the celebration, even that is a little bit short, right? A little incomplete. What we are celebrating are the fundamental ideas embraced in this document. And in my lifetime, I have attended a 4th of July celebration almost every single year. I'm 68 years old now. I'm going to assume that I may have gone to a 4th of July celebration when I was a baby, an infant. I probably went when I was 1 year old and 2 years old and 3 years old, and I'm sure I went from the time I was 5 years old on. I've missed one or two maybe in my entire lifetime, but I've been to a 4th of July celebration virtually every year of my life. And I have been to only one in this lifetime where anyone even read the Declaration of Independence. That was about 3-4 years ago. Down here in Texas, they had a high school girl who stood up in front of the crowd and she read the Declaration of Independence. Nobody explained it, but at least they read it. Most people don't even know what we're celebrating, and what we are celebrating are the ideas, the principles found in this document. And this is, again, the single biggest uniquely American holiday that we have, 4th of July. And most people don't understand what we're even doing. All they know is, oh boy, a day off. Don't have to work. Here we'll go, and let's go into the second sentence of the Declaration of Independence, and this is the most radical statement in Western political history, and I guarantee there's not one man or woman in a thousand who understands what this means. Most Americans are completely ignorant. They don't get it, and it's not an accident, because government doesn't want you to understand. If you can understand this second sentence, you are on the way back to freedom and liberty. And as long as you don't grasp it, you're going nowhere. You are on your way to oppression. Second sentence says, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." Everyone's heard this sentence repeatedly during their lifetime. This isn't news. I can't imagine that there's anyone listening to the program who's never heard that sentence before. But on average, in this country, there are virtually maybe 1 in 1,000 who, at most, understand what the sentence means. And it says, first off, these are truths to be self-evident. It means these are the axioms we're acting on. These are the fundamental principles on which this nation will ultimately be based. These fundamental truths are, first, all men are created equal. That's number one. That wasn't necessarily true previously. They say all men, not persons, not citizens, not inhabitants, not occupants, all men. As in mankind, each of us are created equal. And they go on, the next principle, we are all endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights. Okay? And by implication, these unalienable rights, which means you can't take them away from us. We can't even waive them. Huh? You cannot take the unalienable rights from us. We can't waive them or dispose of them. They are as much a part of you and me as the color of our eyes. These unalienable rights are like a portion of our genetic code. And the reason I say that, it's a metaphor, but the reason I say it is because we're endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights. Tells us, when do we get our unalienable rights? And the answer is they are an attribute because they come from our Creator. They are an attribute of our creation. Huh? They're not an attribute of our birth. If you read the 14th Amendment, it says all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. But you got to be born under the 14th Amendment before any of these civil rights attach. And what born means is you have to be fully exited from the birth canal. Your birth takes place roughly 9 months after your creation, and maybe far more than that. There's a passage in Jeremiah where God's talking to Jeremiah, and he says, I knew you long before you were in your mother's womb, implying that you and I may have been created years or centuries or eons before we were conceived in our mother's womb, and certainly 9 months before we were born. There's a big implication on this. These unalienable rights, including the right to life, attach as an attribute of our creation. That means the right to life is there in the child in the womb. It's there from the moment that the sperm unites with the ovum. And it may be there beforehand, but as a practical matter, the moment the sperm unites with the ovum, we have a creation. You are endowed by your Creator with certain unalienable rights. Under the terms of the Declaration of Independence, there should be no abortion. All right? Under the 14th Amendment, abortion is quite all right, because the 14th Amendment doesn't apply until you are born. All persons born, not all persons created. And again, 14th Amendment also deals with persons, where the Declaration of Independence deals with people and men, and they say men, they're talking about women also in the sense of mankind. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they're endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. All of your liberties flow from where? Your Creator. They do not flow. Freedom flows from man. Mankind can free the slaves. Right? But only God can give us these unalienable rights, our Creator. We get these unalienable rights from our Creator, and these are the rights, including liberty. They flow from God, and it's evidence of the spiritual foundation on which this nation was built. The idea that Jefferson supported separation of church and state is based on a single letter that he sent to a private party back in the day. I don't know, 1700 sometime. I don't know if it was before or after the Declaration of Independence. That has nothing to do with what, and people use that as a basis because Jefferson is credited as being the primary author of the Declaration of Independence, and because he wrote one private letter to someone who talked about separation of church and state, it's been leveraged into an idea that that separation is part of our heritage. And it's not. That's just private correspondence of one guy to another guy. That's all it was. This Declaration of Independence, even though Jefferson may have masterminded writing this document was made real by all of the signatories and all of the people who fought for it and all of the people who embraced it as the foundation, cornerstone for what became the United States of America. This is not the work of Thomas Jefferson. Jefferson wrote it. But it's the work of the people who fought to make it true, all of them. And it's still the work of you and me insofar as we attempt to enforce it. We understand it and enforce it. Again, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they're endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. What do you suppose they mean by the pursuit of happiness? Again, does it mean we all get to go to Disney World? The pursuit of happiness. Is that what the celebration is today? We all get the day off from work and we can go out and get drunk or even smoke dope and eat and get fat and whatever. Play baseball, go swimming, get suntanned, get sunburned. Is that what they mean by the pursuit of happiness? No. What they meant by the pursuit of happiness is they recognized, and I saw this years ago in, I believe it was Bouvier's Law Dictionary. I stumbled on it over 20 years ago, and to this day, I cannot recall precisely where I found it in Bouvier's Law Dictionary. I was just thumbing through it, and I didn't fully understand what I was seeing at the time. But it's stuck in my mind, and it's one of those things I know it's there, and explained that the pursuit of happiness meant freedom of religion. If I came up to you and said, look, I got two doors here, and behind door number one, we got a blonde with a big set of bazooms, and we got a Ferrari and $1 million, okay? And behind door number two, we have eternal salvation. Now, which is going to make you happier? What do you think? You're going to be happier with eternal salvation or with the blonde and the Ferrari and $1 million? And the answer is obvious. Our ultimate happiness is based on our spiritual salvation. When they said pursuit of happiness, they meant freedom of religion. Now, the third sentence, let me explain why this is so radical. Let me go back to the second sentence and explain why this is such a radical statement. Today we read it and we don't understand it because we don't understand the context of history. At the time when they said all men are created equal, they meant all men, including kings. And they said all men are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights. They meant all men, including kings. And the reason this is important is because prior to the Declaration of Independence, in the Western world, under the Holy Roman Empire, and after England broke loose from the Holy Roman Empire and set up the English law system, the fundamental principle was still that the sovereign, there was one sovereign per nation. That would be the king or the queen. Huh? And what made that king or queen sovereign? It was not an election. It wasn't a secular appointment. It was the belief that the king or queen had received the divine right of kings in a coronation ceremony conducted in a church. The king was the sovereign because he and he alone received his rights directly from God. He had the divine right of kings. All others were subjects because they did not get their rights from God. So in the nation of England or France or Spain or whatever, there was one sovereign and all the rest were subjects. And the difference between them is that the king got his rights from God, and all the rest did not. Now, the Declaration of Independence comes along and said, no, wait. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed, and they mean all endowed, by their creator with certain unalienable rights. The unalienable rights correspond to the divine right of kings that had previously been seen in the Holy Roman Empire, and then later in the English law form when England broke loose from the Catholic Church. But they agreed that the sovereign receives his rights from God. This is the essence. If you would be a sovereign man or woman, you've got to look to the second sentence in the Declaration of Independence and make your claim on one of the truths that are self-evident and established in a document that's part of the organic law of the United States of America, that all men, including me, are created equal. That we are all endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights. And with that endowment, we all become sovereigns. This was intended to be a nation where every man, woman, and even unborn child was deemed to be endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, and therefore a sovereign. Under these circumstances, the government would serve us rather than oppress us. The government always serves the sovereign. And it oppresses the subjects. As originally envisioned by the founders, there were no subjects in this country with the possible exception of slaves. And that was not my observation. That was Chisholm versus Georgia, 1793, Supreme Court of the United States. They admit that this nation was to be populated, a nation of sovereigns without subjects. And the government would serve all of us. This is the foundation for government being the public servant. But if we're going to live in a police state, and that's what government wants, they have to deprive us of our memory and our knowledge of fundamental principles on which this nation was built. They want you to understand that you're an animal, that you're a person, that you're a citizen, that you're any one of 100 things, but you are not a man made in God's image. You are not endowed by your Creator with certain unalienable rights, because if they can remove that memory from your mind, that if they can remove that understanding, you no longer have enough sense, enough brains, enough knowledge to stand up and say, I am sovereign, and my sovereignty traces back to my Creator, my creation, my biblical foundation. If you're a sovereign, the government has to serve you. They are your public servant. If you are not a sovereign, if you do not have these unalienable rights, then you're a subject. And they can kick you around any way they want. And this is why this second sentence is so profound. Prior to this, all the nations of the Western world had one sovereign, and all the rest were subjects in each nation. Our nation started out where we're all sovereigns and no subjects. This is the foundation for American exceptionalism. We're going to take a break, a couple more commercial announcements. Be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a Ku band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click satellite system.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addis. This is Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. We're talking about the Declaration of Independence, which is the reason for the celebration today, the 4th of July celebration. And more precisely, we're talking about the ideas that are enshrined in the Declaration of Independence. Trying to communicate how important these are. And again, the second sentence of the Declaration says, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they're endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The endowment with unalienable rights from our Creator, meaning God, makes us sovereigns. This is the foundation for the nation was supposed to be a nation of kings and queens, not with no subjects whatsoever. And that was the intent, and it flows from this sentence. Third sentence of the Declaration is almost as important as the second. Third sentence says that to secure these rights, what rights are they talking about? They're talking about the God-given, unalienable rights that have been referred to in the previous sentence, in the second sentence. Third sentence says that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. All I want to focus on is the first half of that sentence. that to secure these rights, in other words, to secure these God-given, unalienable rights, governments are instituted among men. They are telling us that the principal purpose of the governments that are being created by this Declaration of Independence is to secure to every man, woman, and even unborn child their God-given, unalienable rights to life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, and there's others. But those are the three that are mentioned. And the purpose of government is to secure those rights. Now, how many of you people think that the purpose of government today is to secure your God-given, unalienable rights? And why do you suppose that government has moved itself away from that obligation? And the answer is because government doesn't want to secure your God-given, unalienable rights. It is inconvenient for government to treat you and me and everyone else as if we were free men, as if we were sovereigns. Government doesn't want to be the public servant. Government wants to be the public master. And in order to achieve that role, government has to strip you of your understanding and memory of this concept that you are endowed by your Creator with certain unalienable rights. If you can grab hold of that concept, and if you can enforce it in court, if you can insist on it, government has to be your servant. They don't want to be. And this is why nobody teaches us about the Declaration of Independence. We still celebrate it, but most people don't even understand what's being celebrated. And no one has explained this in my lifetime. I've had to deduce this from reading and studying, and grace of God lets you see some of these things. This country is built on the two principles found in the Declaration in the second sentence and third sentence. First, that we receive our most important rights from God. And second, the principal duty of government is to secure these God-given, unalienable rights to each of us, even if we are too ignorant or too impaired to know what those rights are or to assert them on our own behalf. Even if I am drunk on my butt, if I'm stumbling around, I've had a stroke, I can't think properly, it doesn't matter. The business of government, as envisioned by the founders, was to secure to me my God-given, unalienable rights. That was the first and fundamental objective duty and obligation of government. And today they don't do that at all. They don't want to. Because if they admit that you're a sovereign, they have to admit they're the public servant. And as soon as that happens, all of a sudden, they can't push us around to the same degree that they're doing today. If you're a sovereign and I'm a sovereign, how does the government come knocking on the door and say, look, we want to inspect your house. We want to check to see if you got any firearms. We want this, that, or the other. And the answer is the only way the government can intrude on my life if I'm sovereign is if another sovereign has leveled a complaint against me. The government on its own cannot simply intrude into my life. The servant does not intrude on the life of the master. If I'm a sovereign, I'm the master. If they're the government, they're the public servant. The servant cannot arbitrarily intrude on the life of the master. It requires some other sovereign has to stand up and file a sworn complaint that Alfred Adask has done something that's in violation of fundamental principles that are found in the Declaration or perhaps in the Articles of Confederation or the Northwest Ordinance or the Constitution of the United States, and especially our state constitutions. But if you don't have another sovereign testifying against you, government just buzz off. You have no authority here. How do the court cases work? You go to court, and does the judge judge the sovereign? Huh? No. The sovereign is judged by a jury of his peers, a jury of 12 other sovereigns. The judge sits there as a referee. If we can make the claim under the Declaration of Independence that we're one of the men, we're one of the people, we're one of the men endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, all of a sudden you start coming back and you say, wait a second, we've got some liberty here. We got some freedom here, and we can keep the government off our back. And the foundation for it is right there in that Declaration of Independence. Now, how can you assert your rights under the Declaration of Independence? Well, you're going to have to look in the revised statutes of 1873 and 1875, and I've got articles on this on my blog. And if you visit the blog at adask.wordpress.com, that's adask.wordpress.com, you can look up on the list of categories, Declaration of Independence and or Unalienable Rights, and you will find articles that I've written on this, including links back where you can read the statutes at large, and you can show you where to find the government's assertion, declaration that the organic law of the United States of America includes the Declaration of Independence. It's part of the law today. Huh? You have to be able to find that. If you want to claim your rights under the Declaration of Independence, you're going to have to look into your Bible, in my opinion, and you're going to look to Genesis 1:26 through 28, which declares that all men are created in God's image and given dominion over the animals. You're going to look to the Declaration of Independence, of course, and you're going to look to the Ninth Amendment to the Constitution. Now, the Ninth Amendment says the enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people, not by the citizens, not by the inhabitants, not by the occupants, not by the persons. You have to be able to identify yourself as one of the people. Right? You can't just show up and trust these people. You walk in the door. You got to show them I'm one of the people of the state of Texas or the state of Oregon or the state of Illinois. I am one of the people of the United States of America. And therefore, I have standing under the Ninth Amendment to claim rights that are not enumerated in the Constitution. And that would include the rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness that are declared in the Declaration of Independence. The Ninth Amendment opens the door where we can go right back and grab hold of these God-given unalienable rights. And what is the government going to do? I've got a Ninth Amendment say I'm entitled to the rights not enumerated in the Constitution. And there are others beyond what we find in the Declaration of Independence, but how do you deny the rights found? How can a judge, how can a prosecutor sit back and say, "Wow, you don't have any rights under the Declaration of Independence. That's just old news." They can presume it, but they can't state it in open court and on the record. Ninth Amendment opens this right door right up to where we hold these truths to be self-evident. All men are created equal, that they're endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights. But among these, that's not all of them, but among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. If you can show us a God-given, a right that flows from God, they have to recognize this under the Ninth Amendment. Now, it may be more complex than it's easy to say and hard to do. I get that. But I'm telling you, it's not impossible. It requires study and a little intelligence and some knowledge. But it's not really rocket science once you begin to get the principles, once you begin to understand this. Again, the third sentence says that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men. And the fourth sentence goes on and says that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, what ends are they talking about? They're talking about the ends or purposes, the objectives of one, recognizing that we get our most important rights from God, and two, the business of government is to secure these God-given unalienable rights, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it. Well, there's another right that you can reach with that Ninth Amendment. declared right here. You have a right, if you're one of the people, the right of the people, not the citizens, not the persons, not the Social Security card holders, not the taxpayers. You've got to be one of the people. It is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them, as to them. Not to the judge, not to the judge, not to the prosecutor, as to them. Who do they mean by them? The people. Right? As to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. And then they go on with another sentence that is almost, it's sad on one level. And it's insightful, and it tells us something that's been true throughout history. Prudence indeed will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. And accordingly, all experience hath shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. What that means is they recognized over 200 years ago that we are all more inclined to sit on the couch and put up with an endless amount of crap from government, or a nearly endless amount, before we finally say, all right, you SOBs, here we come. All right? We will suffer. It is our nature, unfortunately, that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. We aren't likely to revolt unless the excrement gets right up to our ears, and then finally we may stand up and say, okay, enough. But it goes on and it says, but when a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. You've all heard it before, but here we have that Ninth Amendment saying that the enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. People, got to be one of the people to make a claim on these rights. And here we have the Declaration saying you have a right, and even a duty, to throw off a despotic government and replace it with a new one that will provide new guards for their future security. This document, the Declaration of Independence, it's no accident that we are having our biggest and most important uniquely American holiday on the 4th of July. The principles found in this document are unparalleled, unprecedented in the Western world. You might be able to trace back to something similar in the era of judges in the Old Testament, but since then, nothing has been seen like this. And this is truly a great, profound, revolutionary, and radical document. If you can grab hold of these ideas in this document, Declaration of Independence, you grab hold of them, you understand them, and you can be on your way back to freedom, liberty, and a prosperous and powerful United States of America. I'm Alfred Adisk. This is Financial Survival. I want to thank all of you for listening. I wish you all a happy holiday, happy 4th of July. I'll be back tomorrow with Melody Cederstrom. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. There never seems to be a single penny left for me.